Welcome to the Top Order Podcast. We are on tour this week. Myself, Lippy and Baldy down in Christchurch at the Hagley Oval for the second test, New Zealand versus Australia. We're also going to cover Stumps Day 2 in Dharamsala as well, where England face off against India. Lots and lots of cricket, lots and lots of excitement through the course of the day at Hagley Oval, all coming up on the Top Order Podcast. Stay tuned.
Even a little swish in there.
Look at this. We've got all the technology, all the gadgets whilst we're on the road. You'll notice a different backdrop. We are down in Christchurch for the course of this test match, New Zealand versus Australia. We'll go obviously into a lot more detail, but we might not need our day five travel arrangements. The way today has gone, seem probably the winner on the day. We're going to start, I think, with New Zealand Australia, aren't we?
Yeah, sure.
talk about some pain for you, Lippy, before we come on some pain for me, and sandwich in the middle. Maybe a bit of joy for our resident Australian as well. But, yeah, look, I guess we're not going to recap the scorecard necessarily in a lot of detail, but 162 New Zealand posted, we felt was below par, but it certainly has it's certainly done a little bit all day. And I think we'll obviously talk about the performance of the seam as Josh Hazlewood for Australia. Stark as well, chipped in with three wickets. And then look, an impressive debut for Ben Sears, I think, bowl with some pace. And Matt Henry really was the Kiwi bowler with the ball on a string. But if we go back to the start of the day, was it a good toss to lose potentially today? What are we thinking in hindsight?
Well, it certainly looked like a good toss to lose after the first hour of play. New Zealand battled hard early. Australia bowled well, but didn't ask New Zealand to play a lot of balls in the first hour. And Latham and Will Young batted really solidly for the first 80, 90 minutes of play. And then Australia started to come back into the game after that. But I think after an hour, it was a pretty good toss to lose for New Zealand. They got off to a good start.
Yeah, I think, I mean, for sure. You're thinking at 30-odd for none there after the first hour, and you're going, okay, this is like still doing a bit. It's moving around, but, you know, we're obviously still in. Tom Latham actually like looked the most positive he's looked for a while. I think he's looked, you know, really comfortable at the crease, even, you know, all the way through till his dismissal. So, and I think you're thinking exactly what you guys just said, that this could be a nice little score here for New Zealand. But then suddenly Josh Hazlewood, you know, comes back for that second spell, and he just changed the game, didn't he, really, with the way he bowled?
Yeah, he did. I think he was definitely the most impressive of the seamers on offer today. You know, I was saying to Michael throughout the course today, I thought, you know, as you mentioned, that perhaps both teams to an extent were a little bit shorter than they needed to be. It seemed to me there was a few, and look, we talked about it, there wasn't a lot of playing and missing early on from
Hazlewood probably was the one that did get
a little bit of play and miss. But other than that, it was that kind of pretty sort of fourth and a half stump line that whistled through to the keeper and looked really, really threatening. But I think because of the amount of movement on offer, particularly maybe Latham at the time, we were kind of, did he need to play at that? And he probably did because of how much the ball was moving around. But yeah, certainly when he came back, Josh Hazlewood got his lengths absolutely spot on. And look, I think sort of, you know, Kane Williamson looked pretty comfortable, didn't he? But then just, one really, really did nip back and pin him on the front pad.
I mean, we think about that over that Hazlewood bowled to Williamson, to set him up. That was top quality in the way that he kind of went away, and then that one that jagged back in. You know, you're sort of thinking, like, you look at that in isolation, you look at the dismissal and you think, oh, he probably, like, Kane should probably hit that, but you know, you put it in the context of that over. Matt Henry did that later to Cameron Green the way he, so like, we did see some top quality bowling. But I mean, from as a New Zealand fan, it'd be nice to see them get over 200 in the series at one point. And I think the point that you guys have touched on a little bit, you know, maybe if we're going to be really harsh, we're saying that some of the guys bowled a little bit short today. I think we're talking about, like, you know, 6 inches too short. Mm-hmm. It's not that they ran in and bowled bounces.
No, they didn't. No,
all day.
That was good carry in that wicket today. Like, that was a very, very good first day test wicket, because the ball did something most of the day. and you really had to work hard as a batter, but you were able to get in as a batter, and you could leave on length. You could trust the length. You knew something was going to do something, but we saw really good carry most of the day through to the wicketkeeper from both ends.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think what was kind of not puzzling is probably the wrong word, but when you kind of look at the way that first hour unfolded, Nathan Lyon got on in the first hour, and it looked as if New Zealand had almost kind of gone, well, we've got through what should have been a real onslaught in that first hour, with, you know, then turning to spin relatively early. But yeah, different story after that drinks break first hour.
Oh, I mean, Hazelwood changed the game. And I think I was saying it to you guys. I think, bigger picture of the day, I really think you could almost make a case that the two batting sides probably did a relatively similar job in the way that they went about the innings. New Zealand obviously slightly worse, but not by drastically, you know, not a drastic amount. I think it's the bowling that really shone through, and that whole Aussie tack, we talked about it in our last episode, they just don't give you anything. So yes, New Zealand did a great job to not lose a wicket in that first hour, but they're on 30 odd. And then, you know, you get through and, you know, you lose your first wicket. I don't know what it was, at 40 something. And then, you know, just throughout that day, they just don't give you anything. I think you pointed it out to me when we were at the ground at one point, Baldy. I think Hazelwood had like 10 overs, 3 for 18 or something, and Cummins at the other end had 9 overs for 7 runs, or maybe the other way around. They just do not give you anything to hit. And so eventually on a pitch like that where, you know, you get it in the right place and it is jagging around, you're just out. You're out, and suddenly you add 2 wickets to that score, and it looks awful.
Yeah, I mean, Australia had some luck too, if you count strangled down the leg side as being some luck. We got 2 of those. We also got a little bit lucky, I think, Australia, in the Ravindra dismissal right before lunch, where we've thrown one out wide, and he's played a shot that he probably would, in hindsight, choose not to play again. But Australia really did bowl very well and probably deserved a little bit of that slice of luck, because I think they did bowl very well. They bowled really well to Daryl Mitchell as well. Didn't allow him to get on top and dominate Australia. Eventually, Hazelwood nicked him off as well. So Australia had a really, really good day in the field. But I think New Zealand had a really, really good day in the field too. I don't feel like, and I know that I was being quite pessimistic in the Australian batting innings because we kept making starts and then getting out, but New Zealand didn't ever let Australia get away from them in that afternoon session. At no point did we look at that scorecard and think Australia are away here. And even though Travis Head got a start, even though Cameron Green got a start, New Zealand kept chipping away at those wickets, which sets up a really interesting day two tomorrow. That first half an hour, as it often does, is going to prove pretty crucial to whether or not Australia have a first innings lead.
Yeah, I want to come on to Marnus. Is he back? He got a couple of back foot sort of punches through the covers away.
Got a
pull shot away, a really well-controlled pull shot actually late in the day where they'd actually got 2 men posted out, roll the wrist, look to run positively. Always a risk of a barbecue, I think, when he's batting. But, are you optimistic that he can kick on and probably silence a few of the critics that are out there from at the moment, Baldy?
Again, he didn't look very fluent in his innings, did he? I mean, Travis Head came in and scored runs pretty fluently for his short stay. But Marnus always looked like he was there to try and graft out a day rather than get on top of the New Zealand bowlers. New Zealand bowled very, very well to him, but he stuck it out. And what's most impressive for me is that he's faced 80 balls now. He's sort of got through that tough period of where's my first run going to come from. I sort of felt like that first 10 or 12 balls, he couldn't find a run anywhere, but you're right, he did get a couple away through the offside, and then sort of things started to not flow from there, but he just kind of worked his way into that inning. So particularly pleasing that he's got through that first tricky period, and he'll have another tricky period tomorrow that he's got to navigate for the first half an hour, 45 minutes, and then he's away.
Before we come on to thoughts for tomorrow, Lippy, I just want to talk to you about selections for New Zealand. So when we look at that bowling innings, Matt Henry bowling a pretty big spell as well, though. 13 overs in total for the day. Sears on debut, 11 overs and bowl.
Absolutely, you know, bamboozled Steve Smith, didn't he, with the little in-jagger?
But my question really is, when we then look at Tim Southee, who you obviously would expect to open the bowling and get anything that he can out of that new Kookaburra, but Scott Kugelheim picked as a fourth right-arm seamer, all, you know, relatively similar paces, but Sears at the top of the par was in the sort of early 140s. Kugelheim only bowled the four overs and probably There's some questions really around whether or not they've got the balance of that side right. Even on a wicket that's seaming around, whether you really need four right arm seamers of similar pace. So yeah, what are your thoughts with the 2020 hindsight that we've got after day one?
I mean, and in terms of the players that they had in the squad, you're thinking a seamer is probably more useful than potentially Santner's going to be. But I would say in terms of the way that they've picked the squad, it doesn't appear that there's a role for Scott Kugler. And that's what we saw in the second innings in Wellington. And we're seeing it. We saw it again today. And even the way that they rotated the bowlers, whether that's the fact that, maybe Southie's lost a little bit of confidence in him or whatever it is, doesn't seem like he's carved out a role in this attack. And so, he's running in. You've got Sears, who's the point of difference for the pace. Southie obviously is, trying to nibble it around. Henry is just the leader of this attack at the moment. He's bowling absolutely brilliantly. Yeah. Bowled, I think, at times without luck today and still mm-hmm. picked up three. Mm-hmm. Got a bit of luck with the way he got Khawaja, kind of off the pads and onto the stumps. But, kind of earned that with the way that he did everything else.
He deserved that wicket, however it came
to
him.
And that kind of evened out a little bit, those. We were discussing, what's the difference with a ball on sort of six stump down the leg side and six stump down the offside. If someone nicks it to second slip, it's good bowling. If they tickle it to the keeper, it's unlucky for the batter. Yeah, but you would say that's evened out a little bit in terms of that Khawaja dismissal.
The one thing we did see today, though, is a bit of the Aussie ruthlessness. We don't often watch games together. Finally there was a partnership for New Zealand, a bit of a partnership developed with Southie and Henry. And the Aussie, who with incredibly high standards, we have talked about this a little bit.
It's a bugbear for mine. It's a bugbear for mine. And I've written it in the notes after day one. New Zealand need to create as much chaos in this match as they possibly can going forward, because the more chaos that you can create out there on the cricket field, I think the more it suits New Zealand, ironically, and the less it suits Australia. If you allow Australia to bowl to their plans, which is what they did from sort of after the first 90 minutes of the day onwards, Australia are going to get you. And this pitch had enough in it that they bowled enough balls. Eventually, they found the right area to bowl, and they bowled enough balls in a good area, and it eventually had, Kane's name on it, had Daryl Mitchell's name on it, etc. Southie and Henry came in and decided that they were going to cause a bit of chaos, a bit of carnage, and they slapped the ball over cover, and they slapped the ball over third man. And, yes, I understand that Daryl Mitchell can't take that same risk, but in so doing, they put on a 60-run partnership at a run a ball. And really, New Zealand could have been, arguably should have been, all out 125, mm-hmm. having been 107 for eight.
Yeah.
But they put together a really good partnership, those two, and that frustrated me as an incredibly partisan spectator for that particular period of time, where I was expecting Australia to be ruthless and go in and finish that job that they had done so well to get to that point.
Look, it's very rare that the three of us are together and it's me that's not the problem. We're recording this podcast. It's 12:45 in the morning because we've just stayed and watched the England-India game, which we'll come on to in a minute. But what are our hopes for the game plan tomorrow for our respective teams? Lippy, I'll start with you.
It's a fairly simple equation for New Zealand. They've got a strike and they've got a strike early. And we talked about it a little bit straight after the game. I don't think they can have the deficit has to be under 100. And then you have to hope that, batting on in the afternoon on day two and then on day three is good. And you can actually, put a partnership together, because that's, like I just said it before, they haven't scored over 200 in the three innings that they've had so far as a group. And it hasn't been good enough. I know, there's been a lot of talk about the bowling, in Kugelein and selection decisions, but it's been the batting. The batting is what's been letting New Zealand down.
We always talk about the bowling attacks when the batting doesn't fire, don't we?
Yeah. It's ridiculous. Yeah, yeah. But the batting just needs to fire now. And, we need to knock Australia off and then actually put a couple of players really need to stand up and get big scores.
It's the same score for Australia.
What's the game plan you want to see, Baldy? So what do you want to see Mitch Marsh do and Alex Carey do when they do come out to bat?
I tell you what I want. I want one of those Australians, other than Cameron Green, to get a start and then go on with it. Because in this test match, and even in this test series against New Zealand, and to a lesser extent in the West Indies series, Australia got a bunch of starts and very, very few players, if any, have gone on and got a big score. Cameron Green got 170 in the last test. Yes, I grant you. But we got four scores today between 11 and 25. everyone got out.
Yeah.
Marnus is now on 45. The onus is on him to go on and get a big score. And if Carey in particular gets in, he needs to go on and get a big score as well. Marsh is going to play the way that he plays. He might take a few risks. He might come off. He might not. Okay, you've got to accept that's the way he plays. But if Carey and or Marnus get in tomorrow, they need to go on and get a very big score. They need to convert some of these opportunities that they've not wasted but haven't taken advantage of.
Absolutely. Well, guys, we'll move on and talk about England, India in a second. We'll segue neatly with an Indian theme. So if you are looking for somewhere to eat close to the ground tomorrow, we can recommend the RG Bargy Curry House.
Very nice. Pretty
decent within walking distance. It's on the Riccarton Road. They did run out of Kingfisher Premium, though, so hopefully more stocks arrive.
It's the first time I've ever drunk a pub out of beer. It's fantastic. Yes, it's a fantastic thing to have on my resume.
We won't say how many we had. But yeah, so Argy Bargy, give it a go if you are looking for somewhere to eat after the game.
You're obviously looking for a free meal tomorrow.
Well, no, I'm not going to eat at the same place twice, but you never know, we might go there later in the week. Let's transition over to India, Dharamsala, the venue for the fifth and final test of this series between England and India. India's dominance, I think, throughout the course of the series, key moments, I think, and key passages of play has really continued today. So again, we're not going to go into heaps and heaps of detail on the scorecard, but in England obviously bowled out yesterday for 218, facing an uphill battle this morning. They managed to get both of the guys that were set, I wouldn't say quickly, but in quick succession today, Rohit Sharma and Shubman Gill. They'll probably be disappointed they've not gone on and got, at least one of them get a really, really big 100. Mm-hmm. And then starts again for Padukal on debut. Sarfraz again has looked good for 50-odd. But, the England spinners have applied themselves and fought England back into the game. But, still a long, 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 long way behind the eight ball. 4-7-3 for eight, the score at stumps. I've got a question for you, Lippy, and it's probably more of a forward look question now. We've seen almost this whole series, England bringing three pretty untried and tested spinners. Mm. We've hearing news that Jack Leach has had an operation on his knee that he injured earlier in the tour. Between Bashir and maybe Ahmed and certainly Hartley, if England are going to play a spinner in their English summer, who do you think is the cab off the rank if Jack Leach isn't fit coming in from what you've seen and why?
You can't say Joe Root, by the way.
No, it wouldn't be Root for me. The way that they build their attack, and I mean, we've seen Stokes come back and bowl in this innings, picked up the wicket of Sharma, wasn't it, in the end, and lovely dismissal to get him. So I think if he's going to be back in the mix bowling, then you certainly can balance your attack and pick a spinner at home. I mean, we see with Australia the way they do it with Lyon. I think it adds value to your attack wherever you are and sort of it builds your attack for the future as well when you're doing that. To try and answer your question, I think the challenge for me to answer it properly is what does Shoaib Bashir look like on a pitch that is not helpful? Because I think for him, Baldy and I have talked a lot when we've been watching it about kind of small things about his action. He bowls, doesn't bowl with much of a jump. He's sort of reminds me a little bit of Saqlain Mushtaq with the way he kind of takes little steps and kind of doesn't get very high off the ground. And that's very useful in certain situations. It's been, useful for the way he's been able to kind of hit the pitch and get some, extract some spin. And look, he looks like someone who's got he's got serious raw talent in terms of the way he can spin the ball. And also he's kind of got the temperament. And I think both Hartley and him have shown really, at a big level that those guys are up for playing test cricket in the way that they've responded to what's been an incredibly tough, this is a pretty tough initiation to one. I mean, you do get the helpful wicket, but it's incredibly tough to go and face the best bowlers and best players of spin, some of the best players of spin in the world when, you've Shoaib Bashir and you've only taken 10 first-class wickets in your career. So, I think the way that they've been able to do that's been fantastic. A long-winded way, I think I'd probably go with Hartley because I think he can, at this stage, I think he's better equipped to play multiple roles as a spinner. He can bowl, try and take wickets if it's helpful, but he can also kind of use flight and use just as control to bowl economically if he needs to, in the way that Leach might have done the same thing.
Absolutely. Look, I agree. And I said, my Slack channel comments are going to be made public when Hartley does cement himself as England's number one spinner and goes past Leach in terms of wickets. I've got a similar question for you, but on the Indian front, Baldy. Mm. So we've obviously not seen much of Virat Kohli or KL Rahul throughout the course of this series. You'd suggest that they... and India, again, let's not forget, they have been pretty consistent in their selection when they've had a guy that has been in possession, so to speak. They've done what a lot of the modern teams have done, and they've given them that that roll back. We'd expect 100% Kohli to come back in. We'd probably expect Rahul to come back in. Mm. And then we've seen Padakal, we've seen Pattadar, we've seen Sarfraz Khan. We've seen Shubman Gill, who was under a little bit of pressure coming into this series
He's answered those questions so well, hasn't he? Gets 100. We talked about him in the last test. He's been fantastic. Yeah. He's actually been fantastic in the last couple of games and really looks like he's in great touch.
And then we've obviously got Yashasvi Jaiswal at the top of the order, who has really burst onto the test scene. So I guess my question is, who of the other guys has done enough? I think we probably count Pattadar out, but who's done enough of the other guys to perhaps take the batting spot that might be up for grabs in that? And I think I know what your answer is, but I want to hear your rationale.
It's a great question. I think of all the players that we've seen, I think Dhruv Jurel poses the most interesting questions, because it poses the question of, can you bet KL Rahul as a better at number five, which then I think answers all the other questions in and around that order, because it means if KL Rahul bets five and Ravindra Jadeja bets six and then Dhruv Jurel bets seven, they're all your questions really answered, aren't they? But if they choose to bet KL Rahul as a wicketkeeper, or they need to move Jadeja down or whatever, they want to pick another batter, that's when it starts getting really interesting. I'll make no secret of it. Other than the shot that he played immediately after tea today to just steer the ball to Joe Root when nothing was really doing, I really like Sarfraz Khan. I don't know why. I can't explain it. I've got no... There's no science. There's no analytics.
It's an eye test.
I just like them.
Yeah.
For the same reason, I don't like Pattadar, and I can't tell you why. I like Sarfraz, and I don't like Pattadar. Devdutt Padukal looked pretty good today in the test match. He looked in control. He took the spinners on pretty judiciously, but he's getting out. He got a pretty good ball in the end.
Lovely delivery. From Bashir.
But that just started a little bit of a rot for India. They lost a few quick wickets there, and particularly when Jadeja got out, England went on a bit of a roll. So, that's a good start. But those two guys in particular, Sarfraz and Padukal, if they get opportunities, they've got to go on and get big scores, because it's hundreds or bust for those guys at the moment. There's so many people. We haven't talked about Shreyas Iyer. We haven't talked about a number of other candidates in that side. Any one of those could come in and fill that spot and do it admirably.
And the thing is that, we're about to go into IPL, we're about to go into a T20 World Cup, and then the tests, like, so much could change between their next test.
Punt could be back.
Yeah, Rishabh Pant could be back, which, throws the cat amongst the pigeons again. Can we go back to day one a little bit and just mention Kuldeep Yadav? I know you don't want to talk too much about the batting, but
we do.
Obviously, this was, Ravi Chandran Ashwin's 100th test, amazing career. I think we've often talked about, I in particular have talked how much I enjoy watching him bowl and the kind of craft that he operates with. Takes four wickets, but I think completely overshadowed by Kuldeep Yadav in the way that he took those five wickets, because they were, pretty much all top order players from memory. And just the dismissals, they're just kind of what you dream about. Duckett, he beats him, skies one up in the air. Next one, he gets his Pope, which Pope runs past one, which is the wrong. And I think I told one of you guys, I saw a nice little clip of Dhruv Jurel in Hindi saying the ball, like just before that ball, he says, he's going to come at you. And he bowls the wrong and Ollie Pope steps down the wicket. And then, I think the best of all is the Zach Crawley one that goes through the gate. Anyone who listens to this knows how much I love any spinner going through the gate, and that was just special.
It was brilliant. I don't want to get too technical, Stu, but the seam position, we've talked a lot about seam position of the England spinners and they're bowling really square on in this series, particularly early on in the innings that we've just been watching India bat. But that seam position from Kuldeep was just about perfect. It was absolutely perfect as it came down the wicket. And the ball ragged a long way. That hit the top of leg stump. It was just brilliant. But all five dismissals were dismissals as a leg spinner. That you, if you took those in club land, that would be your one dismissal for the year where you're like, I really bowled that.
I've defeated the batter as good as I can be. Yeah. And I mean, you know, same kind of selection question you guys were talking about. Kuldeep's been fantastic in this series. And, you know, I mean, he's going to be posing pressure. But, you know, they go overseas and, like the way you guys were talking before, Ashwin's often missed out and another batter comes in and things. So, you know, the way that those – they're going to – and even Akash Deep has come in and impressed a little bit in this series. Mm-hmm. So there are so many questions. Shami's going to be back at some point.
Yeah, but lots of permutations as well for India. So, you know, they've got – you know, we talk about it a lot. They've got this luxury of, you know, such a deep bench and even, you know – and I don't think they'll ever do this, but – they would have the opportunity to play him as a sort of a luxury spinner because of the fact that they've got people like Ravi Jadeja
who can legitimately bat and bowl
and maybe squeeze him in and still then have three seaming options as well if they're playing overseas. So
Four if they play Hardik.
Yeah, and look, he's certainly, I think, one of those guys that, you know, I think Test cricket is going to get played in a more aggressive fashion, not just because of, you know, what's happened over the course of the last...
Because of the way Ben Duckett's played.
Exactly, because of the way Ben Duckett is teaching the world to play. We say that of tongue firmly in cheek for all of our listeners. But look, I honestly think that, you know, the game is going to, you know, look to those guys that can have that impact. And, we look at Yadav, his economy rate isn't great, but he takes wickets. It doesn't really matter because his strike rate's so good and he takes so many wickets that... You know, ultimately, his average is going to be pretty tidy as well. But, yeah, he was fantastic yesterday. Really, really fantastic.
Just to wrap this up, I know we all want to kind of get some sleep before we end up going to the test tomorrow.
Yeah.
Is there anything you're hoping to see? I mean, obviously, England is way behind in this test. It's going to be – and it would be, you know, a minor miracle for them to come back and win or even put India under much pressure now that they're, I think, 250 runs behind on the first innings. Is there anything that you kind of want to see that you haven't seen from – the series, you know, like, is there one last thing that you'd like to see someone on the England side do to kind of finish this tour? That I think, you know, there are going to be varying views on how this tour is when it's all said and done, when people are wrapping it up, and we'll get to that in due course. But, yeah, anything you'd like to see in these last couple of days?
Yeah, look, I'd like to see Jimmy get to his 700th test wicket. I think that will help England in a lot of ways because it will probably mean we've not got that sort of chat about it in the summer. I think England, you know, this series, regardless of the result in this test match, England can go away and, you know, say, look, we have been beaten. We've been soundly beaten by a much better team in a really, really difficult place to play. But I do think, and this is not just the modern rhetoric, I do think there's some positives that England can take away from this. They have unearthed a couple of guys that look as if they've got the credentials to be playing test cricket in Bashir and Hartley. Zach Crawley's been really impressive as well throughout the course of the series. And do you know what? Ben Folkes has really, I think, enhanced the argument if it needed enhancing anymore. He's played a couple of pretty important knocks and, you know, he's kept immaculately as well. And I know there's going to be questions about whether he gets back in the side. What I'd like to see and what I think we'll see are two different things. You know, I think India have got enough runs now. You know, there's a pretty good chance that India don't need to bat again in this test match, in my view. But, you know, what would be great for the series and great for us, particularly over the next 3 or 4 days where we've afforded the ability to watch a bit of cricket, both in person and on TV, is going to be that England do somehow get themselves, in the game with, you know, maybe a total of 400 or thereabouts. I don't think they'll do it, but that would be what I would love to see so that we've got some cricket to watch and you know, we maybe just see, you know, another couple of sessions of exciting test cricket from this series.
Very good.
Anything else? We'll just leave you with this thing we were pondering earlier on. When a spinner bowls and it doesn't spin, it's... What's the term that
natural
we use?
Variation.
Natural variation. Why can a batter not nick a cover drive past slip and that's natural variation and it doesn't go through the covers? We're just going to leave that with you. Pop your comments down below. We are going to be back every day of this Hagley Oval test match as long as it goes on, and certainly be there to wrap the test match up as well, and we'll talk England, India as well over the course of the next 3 or 4 days. We'll also be posting little updates at the end of every session of this test match as well on our Instagram channel. So please do get involved, like, share, subscribe, and all those things that you do on social media to help others find the podcast. And if you've got any restaurant recommendations in the Christchurch area, please drop them in the comments as well. But for now, it is good morning and good bless from us all here. Saturday morning, nearly 1 o'clock here in Christchurch. We'll see you tomorrow on the Top of the Podcast. See you later.